Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Swindlehurst, and now the dust has settled, we're here to take a look at the standout points from a season like no other. I'm joined by Jordan Warland. Hello.
Hiya, Jack. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. And I love the fact that the week that we're going to announce season ticket details, we are prolonging the celebration of last season just a little bit longer.
Absolutely has to be done, and we will keep on flogging this dead horse until we can do no more. Owen Kiernan, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Nice to see you. And Tom Walker, welcome.
Good to be back.
As always. So the 2020 season ended under a cloud of COVID, and we really didn't know what the 2020-2021 season was going to hold. Thinking back to that summer, Tom, and all the hard work the club did, what are the memories that really stick with you from then?
Mainly just the level of uncertainty that kind of surrounded, well, everything, but from a kind of football perspective, would the season take place? Because I think that was a genuine question mark at the time. Would we get started again while this sort of thing goes on? If it did start, how would it look? Would we be able to go? Would the club survive it? You know, we take it for granted now a little bit, I guess. But, you know, Paul Barry, you know, obviously the major shareholder in the club, his business is in travel. So, you know, it seemed potentially likely that he might not want to continue, you know, shoving hundreds of thousands of pounds into a football club that wasn't bringing anything in. And I think, you know, in kind of purely sort of footballing terms, you know, we had a new manager at the time, and you know, Bonner had just been appointed on a permanent basis. There were sort of interesting things going on throughout the summer in terms of sort of incomings. Obviously brought in, you know, a number of players into the team, probably most notably obviously Wes Houlihan joined after a bit of a saga the year before. Obviously brought in the sort of two centre forwards who probably defined the season in many ways, and obviously Mullin, who was on loan for a bit at the end of the curtailed season before, and Joe Ironside, who came from Macclesfield. And I think the main thing that we said in our sort of season preview, that I think sort of proved to be right, was that basically there's so much up for discussion about the whole season and about you know, the club and obviously the team itself. And if things go really well and everything clicks and everything goes positively, we'll probably do very well. But there was also the potential for it to basically be a bit of a disaster. So thankfully we avoided the latter of that. But I think going back to the summer, it's, you know, it seems such a long time ago now. It seems like so much has happened in the meantime, but I think it was basically just uncertainty that surrounded everything. And It was kind of hard to get up for the season, you know, knowing that, you know, you wouldn't be able to go. It was, you know, always going to be a bit of a strange thing. You know, you go from almost planning your weekends and planning your sort of time around who we're playing to, you know, just sitting on the sofa on a Saturday afternoon watching us on iFollow. So it was a bit of a strange one to sort of, you know, motivate yourself for. But it obviously turned out all right.
Absolutely. Those memories of that that first game against Birmingham, managing to get it together to be able to be with a couple of other Cambridge fans and watch that game was a nice one. But yeah, certainly an odd experience. And one of the new signings in that game, Robbie Cundy, he scored the winner. And there was like cautious optimism, I think, around the start of the season after that, you know. But I mean, I think it was just the return of football, really, that that lifted the Cambridge United fans there. We saw a victory in the EFL Trophy as well, of course, being a club that was trialling having fans there, of course, was a kind of big talking point nationally. And then the season itself started, and more positively, I'd imagine, than most people could have expected. Starting with a 3-0 victory, Owen, against Carlisle United at the Abbey. And then from there, other good results against Morecambe. It kind of just started to feel like Cambridge United had maybe cracked it at the start of the season.
Yeah, it did. I mean, my main kind of taking point from September was initially one of just like massive disappointment. because when we had the Fulham trial game in the EFL Trophy, and then they announced that the Carlisle game was going to be the first Football League game that fans were going to be allowed back into, and we were going to be the first club, and you know, that really just reflected like all the hard work, like Tom said, but you know, the club had done during the pandemic, which, you know, I think we've all kind of come to terms with kind of coronavirus now and this kind of post-COVID world, you know, how we live in it, how it's changed our lives. But, you know, looking back to that kind of period back in, you know, back in kind of like March and April last year, it was really new. And even by the time the season rolled around in September, you know, we were still kind of struggling to kind of come to terms with everything. And, you know, everyone at the club had done really well over the summer to keep everyone informed of what might happen. And, you know, like you said, Tom, like, you know, Paul Barry was obviously trying to manage the, you know, loss of income of his travel business while also trying to keep United afloat. And, you know, was very candid and very honest about the situation. So, you know, for football to come back with that Carlisle game, to me, was just like, right, great. Like, we're finally getting back to some kind of normality now. And then it was literally like the Thursday night, wasn't it? They pulled it. They're like, right, no, all sports going to be behind closed doors. And so, yeah, it was just this huge, huge disappointment. You know, I'd been geared up. I think we'd all, you know, all got ready to go to the Abbey that Saturday, you know, season tickets, people bought the tickets. Really, really exciting time. And then, yeah, to have that kind of taken away from us was initially really disappointing. But, you know, iFollow, you know, the club kind of put together some decent content on iFollow, you know, with the pre-match stuff, which was, you know, really enjoyable to watch. And, you know, we got off to a great start. We got off to, what, like a 3-0 win against Carlisle there. I think Hannan got the first goal, didn't he? And Mullen, the nine side, got the others. And then, you know, then we went up to Morecambe and beat them 5-0. Mullen got a hat-trick that day, I think, Wes and Adam May, I think, got the other one there. So it's like, you look at both them teams, and I think Carlisle were kind of semi-fancied maybe at the start of the season. I don't think, you know, I think everyone was kind of predicting Bolton, Salford, etc. to go up. But, you know, Carlisle were kind of a there or thereabouts team. Morecambe, I can't really remember anyone predicting too much for Morecambe, but, you know, as the season went on, but, you know, they went up via the playoffs. They took it to, you know, pretty much the last game of the season. You know, Carlisle were also a very good side for, you know, a long part of the season. You know, were top for a long time until, you know, just the sheer number of games they had to play has kind of caught up with them. So, you know, when you look at it back now to kind of score 8 goals and not concede any against, you know, two teams that are essentially promotion rivals, that's not a bad start to the season, is it?
No, absolutely not. And yeah, positive signs for Cambridge United, even in a kind of strange, yeah, strange eventuality that it all panned out. And then, yeah, kind of a 0-0 draw, which I don't remember very much about, against Tranmere Rovers at the Abbey to end September. And then I think a conversation that was had far and wide through the Football League, especially for those teams in League One and League Two, was that fixture congestion that was inevitably going to happen. And, you know, teams struggling to play, you know, Tuesdays and Saturdays and stuff. And there was a real kind of, yeah, focus on that. And October looked quite scary for Cambridge United, just with the amount of games they had. Jordan, we recorded during that time, and we kind of kept on looking at how compressed all the fixtures were, and kept on saying Cambridge would kind of crumble at one point. But October, I remember looking very worrying for Cambridge. What's one of your kind of standout memories from there?
Yeah, plenty. I mean, like, September was that up and down emotional month of, you know, a bit of hope with the Fulham game, then being dashed and taken away from us, like Owen quite rightly pointed out. And then, yeah, October was that first month that you realise, because of everything that's happening in the world and the delay to the season and pre-season and everything that COVID had sort of had on this new season and last season was now catching up with us, and this busy sort of fixture list was kicking in because there was quite a few Tuesday nights in October, and we'll come on to this later in the pod, but Tuesday nights became a thing of a curse later in the season. But actually, in October, Tuesday nights were quite glorious. And, you know, we'll talk later on in the pod about best moments of the season and best goals of the season, but there was a Port Vale game on a nice balmy Tuesday night in October, which we ended up winning 3-1. They were the first kind of real fancy team that we played at the time. I believe they missed out on the playoffs the season before on PPG. They had a very good squad. They were very rated at the time. It didn't work out for them. But yeah, it was the first real tough challenge. We had this great start, you know, the wins against Morecambe and Tranmere. Personally, I thought it was just a bit of a, I don't know, I don't want to say a fluke, but a bit of a lucky start. And we had quite a disappointing result against Tranmere at home. We were very lucky not to lose that game and held on. And I thought, you know what, October into November is going to be the time that we're going to see the real Cambridge United, and we'll settle into being that sort of mid-table team with this tiny budget that might struggle to stay out of the relegation fight. But the truth is, we did see the real Cambridge United in October, but it wasn't that Cambridge United we were expecting. It was this attacking, free-flowing, creative team. And yeah, I don't want to go in too much to goal of the season, but my memory from October, that second goal for Paul Mullin is one of the best team goals I've seen us score, not just this season, but for a long time. And yeah, October was really the first month where I kind of sort of thought, oh, hang on, this might not be a season that we struggle in, based on those results against Port Vale and Newport, who we beat soon afterwards, who were top of the league at the time. And one final thing that I'll remember from October, the arrival on loan of a certain Boateng from Milton Keynes.
Yeah, I think the Port Vale game is obviously a really good one to touch on, because I think they were, I think, favourites for certainly automatic promotion, having had, you know, a decent end to the season before, and I think kind of made a few, you know, decent additions in the summer as well. So we're certainly very fancied. But I think the other one as well is that it probably is that Newport game, just because, you know, we seem to have been playing them every other week basically for the last sort of 5 years, and I think they'd become something of a bogey team in many ways, and to beat them in the rain as well. I mean,
not just rain, monsoon weather.
Yeah, I mean, I recall at half time they were sort of literally brushing water off the pitch. It was like it was basically sitting. It was just sitting there. Like, it was incredible effort to keep it on, to be fair. And, you know, probably that's one thing to mention, that as the season went on, there were a number of times where the sort of ground staff, you know, did well to keep games on that we ended up winning or getting something out of, that, you know, might well have been very crucial. That was something in a brilliant sort of theme of the whole season, was that it wasn't just the 11 on the pitch, it wasn't just the manager who sort of contributed. It seemed to be a real sort of united effort from everybody involved. But yeah, I mean, just going back to the football, I mean, obviously the Newport game was a brilliant win. It was, again, you know, Mullin got a brace, so he was really starting to, you know, cement himself as the goal scorer of the team. But then, you know, we went the week after that to Scunthorpe and beat them 5-0 as well. And, you know, Owen and Jordan, you know, you guys have been going to Cambridge a little bit longer than I have, but I certainly can't recall many seasons or many times where we'd won 5-0 away from home twice in the space of about 4 weeks. It was almost like pinch me sort of stuff, really. It was absolutely, you know, absolutely crazy. And, you know, we can talk about the quality of the sides that we beat. Obviously Morecambe were quite poor at the time, and obviously Scunthorpe were pretty rubbish as well. But how many times in previous years have we gone to those sorts of fixtures and lost? So to come out of them with 2-5-0 wins is pretty incredible. And then, I mean, the strange thing was, sort of, you know, we ended the month in October with the loss at Crawley, but I think it's probably one of the most positive performances of the whole season. I thought we were terrific. So it seemed to be the case that even when we lose, it's still at least, you know, semi-enjoyable to watch. So, I think October was the first, obviously, full month, and it was the first real sign of what was going to come, both in terms of how we were playing, but also in terms of you know, the sort of nature of the season, which is, I think, about 8 games, which is ridiculous, really, especially given it wasn't that sort of busy Christmas schedule or anything like that. It was a normal month, but really got us off and up, you know, kind of up and running.
Going back to that Newport game, Tom, you mentioned about the off the field people. Also kind of got a shout out the club's like commercial department or marketing department or whatever it is during the season. You know, in the Newport game, we wore that special kit, that all white kit, but it was, you know, like a lovely shirt, one of the nicest we've ever had. Obviously, they bought out the two retro Fujitsu kits as well during the season. So, you know, just did all this kind of, yeah, great stuff there to, like, you know, keep fans engaged, and more importantly for the club, like keep money rolling in with, you know, everyone snapping up, you know, hundreds of these nice tasty shirts.
Yeah, absolutely right. Really important to highlight how good the club were all during that summer, really. And then throughout this season, it's kind of been incredible to see the combined effort of volunteers and staff alike. And yeah, it's been certainly one of the high points of what's been a difficult season, seeing that. Tom, you touched on that Crawley game, yeah, being an unfortunate end to October, but a positive performance. And then straight into November, another Tuesday night game, and Cambridge United come past Salford City, a team who always seem to be tipped for promotion and don't ever seem to get it, which is something quite poetic, I think, about that. But so November itself started, yeah, pretty well. We had a couple of cup games again, and then maybe a little bit more of a disappointing end. So, yeah, Tom, November, maybe when things started to kind of slow down a bit fixture-wise, but not as fruitful for Cambridge United as the months that had gone before.
No, not really. But again, like, we even sort of through that, you know, through November, beat Salford, get a good point away at Cheltenham, sort of very late on. I remember the Barrow game, watching that, the Barrow at home. I think they scored the sort of, I think, like 90. It was literally like last touch of the game sort of stuff. They got their equaliser with. I think that was probably like the flattest that I've felt after a football match for a very long time. That was a proper kick in the teeth. And then to go away to Cheltenham only 3 or 4 days later and do exactly the same thing to them that Barrow done to us. Again, it's easy to say now in sort of hindsight, you know, being able to look back on obviously what's happened, but it's just another sign of the sort of, you know, character sort of within the team. I'm not convinced that on paper, if you look at the squads and you look at the finances involved, all that sort of stuff, I'm not sure that you necessarily have places in the top three in terms of the sort of, you know, track records of the players, all that sort of stuff. But I think that was such kind of a key theme, and was getting promoted, and it was just on display there perfectly, really.
Yeah, I thought November was all right for sort of results and return on points. But the first thing, I don't know, like looking back at this season and looking back at this team that I now know as and call the Lockdown Legends, I always remembered this season for them getting me through sort of the bleakness and the dullness of being in lockdown. And Tom touched on it there, that feeling when Barrow scored in the 96th minute, you know, I think it was a free header from a cross that should have been sort of cut out at source. That feeling of dejection, that was such a bitter, bitter feeling. It was so low. And I look back at it now with kind of sort of hindsight, and it just kind of reflects how much more this season meant, because there was so little else going on that all you really had going for you was the football every week. And fortunately for pretty much all those weeks, we saw good performances and good goals and so forth. But there were points when it didn't go as well. And they really, really stuck with you more than any other season, because you were so sort of dependent on this kind of factor in your life. But yeah, as Tom quite rightly points out, only a few days later, the complete reverse happens, that Mullin last minute equaliser against Cheltenham. And that was the first, I think, of many late goals that we would go on to score throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think your point about that dejection and that feeling, it's kind of, you know, accentuated when it's the middle of winter and you're at home and you can't chat to your mates after the game about it or whatever. You know, debrief leaving the ground, it does feel a little bit, yeah, that WhatsApp group chat debrief doesn't quite feel as comforting when you've just watched it on iFollow. But yeah, certainly an interesting November unfolded, and yeah, interesting to see that late revival from Cambridge. They showed a lot of backbone in the whole season, but yeah, certainly discipline to go right through to the end. December, again, is always famed for being fixture heavy, and this December for Cambridge was no different. And it started poorly for United, and I feel like this was kind of that horrible sinking feeling of the wheels coming off. The league start to December were three losses on the bounce, and I think for a lot of people that that started to signal that it could be the end. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It also coincided perfectly with us getting back into the ground as well. So typical Cambridge United fashion, brilliant up until the moment we can go, and then as soon as we turn up, it turned to shit, basically. Yeah, I think, you know, we just talked about that sort of run at the start of the season, the fact, you know, we seem to be putting away a lot of goals and a lot of wins against teams who are very much fancied. And December was literally the complete opposite of that. We were playing teams who, I think Mansfield came to the Abbey, I think they were 23rd in the league or something like that at the time. They beat us. Oldham, obviously, you know, finished, I don't know exactly where it was, but it was certainly lower mid-table. They beat us. Forest Green went away there. We got absolutely hammered in that game. Fortunate that only finished 2-0. We went away to, at the time, a very poor Bradford team and lost. We went away to Stevenage and lost, which you know, was a pretty awful result. You know, given that they were, I think, actually bottom of the league at the time as well. So there were a lot of poor results against poor teams in there. Having said that, we still managed to pick up some points. You know, managed to beat Orient at home. And I think if we're gonna talk about turning points in the season, even though the loss against Stevenage came only, I think it was 3 days later, I think that Leyton Orient game really was the moment that sort of started us on almost the final stretch towards getting promoted. It was the first time that we'd seen Wes Houlihan playing a 10. He was put there, I think, just after half time, scored the first goal to equalise in that game, set up the winner for Mullin. If you're asking me for sort of moments in seasons that a sort of pivotal, I think that really was one. So even though it was, on paper, a pretty poor month in terms of results and teams that we played, I think that was such an important point that really set us up for the sort of next few months, because that was, obviously basically what won us promotion. I think in the end was getting the best out of probably the best player in the league.
I love summer Tom Walker. He's so positive. Like December was bleak, you know, like one win in five, some really, really poor results at home and losing to teams that were, you know, bottom of the league or we should have walked over. But quite rightly, focuses on what has got to be probably one of the best 90 minutes performances from a single player throughout this season. You know, Wes had been brilliant pretty much from the start of the season. That Morecambe game in August, he was brilliant, scored a great goal and so on. But that Orient game, and I'm so happy that Tom picked this out, because it can get lost in that month of, you know, doom and gloom, and where people were sort of questioning whether we were the real deal or you know, will we drop off or whatever. But that one performance was, that one result was terrific. It was a turning point, like Tom says. And yeah, that performance from Wes was just next level. Like, we'd seen good Wes and we'd seen great Wes in sort of flashes throughout the season up until that point in December. But that was the first full, he picked up the game by the scruff of his neck, controlled it, bossed it. He created that result for us. And he would go on to have similar performances until to the end of the season. But that is the first time I remember thinking, wow, this is not just a very good player, this is a great player. And how exceptional it is to see him.
Yeah, because I think it's probably worth, like, sort of noting that I think up until that point, there were still a lot of question marks about the role that he had to play in this team. He was often put out wide. I think in a 4-4-2, that's how we started the season. That's how I sort of played obviously quite a lot of the games. You know, you obviously saw the flashes of his quality. You know, he's never not going to have that in terms of his touches. Maybe some of the passes that he was trying that maybe weren't quite coming off. Maybe some of the, you know, sort of runs that he was doing, that sort of stuff that, you know, you never really lose and, you know, we're never not going to be part of his game. But we never quite, I think, saw up until that point him controlling games and really sort of being the difference. And that was, I think, for a lot of people, really disappointing. And a lot of people maybe thought, maybe just not quite up to it anymore, which is probably not unfair given his age and given how things were sort of going. But, you know, I think we maintained throughout that the way that you're going to be successful in this league this season is getting the best out of him. And I think it did become a point where we just needed to build the team around him. That's kind of exactly what Bonner did. Unfortunately, it worked. It obviously worked really well. But yeah, obviously, I recall sort of being at the Mansfield game, particularly, and people was, you know, sort of on the stands. You know, you sort of hear the talk as you do when you go, and a lot of it was like, this guy's just not contributing. He's like not contributing enough. And I'm so glad that he turned it around, because from there, you know, we talk about that Orient game. I think it was about a 5-minute period from being 1-0 down to 2-1 up because of the work that he'd done. And it's really not unreasonable to say that some of the performances he put in, certainly later on in the season, were the best I've ever seen for us, basically.
It was tactically a very significant month and an important month. Like Tom says, it was the first time we saw him moved into a number 10 as part of sort of more of a diamond formation. Like, Bonner had flirted with this idea of kind of sort of 4-2-3-1. Which kind of put Wes in either a 10 role or more advanced than that narrow wide midfielder role that he was playing at the start of the season. But the big criticism that quite rightly the team experienced when we tried that was Mullin was really struggling up top on his own. So we were in this position where we knew that we needed Ironside alongside him. We needed Wes in there to create something for the pair of them. And this was kind of the gelling of that moment, coming up with this sort of formation that would then be so fruitful going into like the remaining, you know, the second half of the season, the remaining 4 or 5 months that ultimately got us across the line.
I think it's, you know, it's one of the makings of Mark Bonner as well, isn't it? As a manager, it's something we're going to, you know, hopefully look back on in a few years when, you know, when Bonner's either taken us up leagues or gone on to bigger things himself. But, you know, for him to kind of recognize something isn't quite working. You know, we were doing okay before that. You know, we'd had, you know, we were still doing pretty well. But for him to kind of recognize that something isn't working perhaps to our biggest strengths and to change it is, you know, there's a lot of managers that, you know, that are just stubborn, but are, you know, we saw it with Calderwood, but are just kind of stuck in their ways, really.
Absolutely. And it was certainly a turbulent few weeks. And yeah, December's always hectic, but it was hectic for a very different style. I suppose if this was Sky Sports Premier League years, it would do that bit where it cuts to like news around the world and probably be like, and coronavirus went on for another 5 months or whatever. But coming up in the second part, we're going to look forward from January 2021 and see how the rest of the season went. Into January 2021, there was nervous trepidation about Cambridge United's form and whether they could see things through and get to the hallowed turf of League One. And January 2021 was actually a really good month for Cambridge United. I think this was, you know, everything seemed to be make or break, but getting to January and looking at the games, you know, a lot of them needed to be victories, and a lot of them were victories, starting with a trip to Grimsby Town on the 2nd of January, Cambridge United winning, and of course Paul Mullin scoring again in that game. Owen, what are your standout memories of January?
It was just a really successful month, wasn't it? I think we went unbeaten in the league. I think we won and drew all our games. I think we had Ironside out for a little bit of time, didn't we? Around that period, he injured his neck, I believe. So Harvey Nibbs came in. I think he might have came in a little bit before, actually, in December. But you know, he scored an important goal at Colchester to get us a point there. You know, we had, you know, people like Jack Idle, we had people like Adam Mays scoring as well. Kyle Noel scored against Crawley. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you begin to see everyone chipping in a little bit, and, you know, you begin to realise, like, okay, we're not a one-man team. We're not just relying on Paul Mullin to score all these goals. Other people are kind of starting to contribute on the goal front. You know, think Ironside ended up scoring at Southend away, you know, when he came back there. So, you know, it's good to see goals start to come in. An unbeaten month is, you know, it's faultless, isn't it? You know, you can't really ask for much more.
Yeah, it was a brilliant month on the pitch. And, you know, Owen talks about goals. That Southend away game, Jackie Iredale throws in a contender for goal of the season with his half volley. Like, on the pitch was very, very good. It was a good response to what was a tough December. And, you know, obviously we didn't pick up a lot of points in December. But, yeah, it was a good reaction. On the pitch, things were going great. But I think it's worth remembering that off the pitch, things weren't going as great. Mitov got injured and thus started the what would go on to be the next sort of 4 or 5 months of debate of who is better, Mitov or Burton. So Burton came into the team to replace Mitov, who we found out wouldn't be back this season. There was a lot of worry about how would we get on with our sub goalkeeper for the rest of the season. And then elsewhere, like the big headlines off the pitch was the fact that we lost two centre backs in the space of 2 days at the end of January. I said it was bad news off the field, technically, and I'm sure Tom Walker will jump in and tell me it was good news off the field because we did a really good deal with Darling in terms of money and sell-ons. But at the time, it was a bit of a mad panic. You know, losing one really good centre back is one thing, but then to lose Robbie Cundy literally a day or two later was it led to some scepticism about how the rest of the season would pan out.
Yeah, I remember that we actually recorded a pod. I think it was between those two centre backs going, and we basically said,
"I remember this.
We've got a ready-made replacement in Robbie Cundy. He's here. He's looked good whenever he's played, etc., etc." Which was absolutely true at the time. And then literally, I think it can't have been more than a day after. It was like in typical Under the Ivy Sam fashion. We go all guns blazing in on an opinion only for the rug to be pulled from underneath our car. That's one of those moments that was really difficult to sort of navigate. I think we did end up bringing in some real quality. I think we talked about Okadina, who obviously came in during January. I was so impressed by him. I thought he was an excellent, excellent addition. And, you know, it almost kind of summed up Mark Bonner as a manager and sort of his personality in many ways, which was just like, don't worry too much about it. You know, stay focused. Don't get too carried away with things. Let's just, you know, keep going as we have been and, you know, trust in the process almost that we're going to, you know, be able to bring in, you know, at worst, you know, kind of equal replacements. And that's kind of exactly what we did. I'd probably say actually, even despite that, and obviously that was a very tricky thing to navigate, we also managed to hold on to players who I wasn't sure we'd be able to hold on to. You know, obviously Mullin, I think up until that point, I think he scored his 20th goal of the season at Grimsby. I think it was the 2nd of January, you know, indicated that he was going to go on and have the rest of the season that he sort of had. And, you know, January is obviously a time when if you have good players, often they leave you, especially with us, it seems to be, especially as soon as you get a goal scorer who knows where the back of the net is. So I think to hold on to those players was a really big thing as well, because I think it's one thing to replace a centre back, but it's something else to, you know, to kind of replace the guy who's scored you know, as many goals as he had up until that point. And then there's guys like Kyle Noyle as well, who obviously I think a lot of people would probably argue could be in for a shout of the best player, obviously this season, player of the season awards. Obviously, it's nice to have a lot of options to talk about there, but certainly he was excellent, and I'm sure that there was interest in him then, and probably will be as we sort of move into this summer. But I think a couple of really sort of key moments in that obviously that month. I think the Harrogate game was probably the first, in my opinion, 90-minute performance that we'd seen from Wes Houlihan. He was absolutely crucial in that game, playing in that role. Again, another example of the conditions not being too good. I remember the fog during the Harrogate game. I think Giants had scored the equaliser. I was watching some of the highlights back earlier. You can barely even see the ball going in. It's like the only reason that you know it's gone in is because the players are sort of shouting and screaming and celebrating. And then obviously Wes scored the winner there, and that felt like a real sort of release when that in, I seem to remember. And then the game up at Southend, you know, people listening to this will probably remember that we were due to play them a little bit earlier on in the season, but they played the game, so to speak, without playing the game, and obviously got it postponed to a time where they were able to bring in some recruits. I remember when we went 1-0 down in that game, thinking if they do a job on us here, this would be really, really frustrating. And then to come back in that second half in that fashion, brilliant goal from Jack Iredale. And I think it was Ironside that scored the winner that was set up by Mullin. So a very, very typical performance of or what became a very typical performance of us, really. And yeah, obviously great to come out of that month, firstly, with a lot more points on the board. But secondly, I think to come out of it retaining, you know, your top goal scorer, one or two of your best players. All right, there was a bit of an issue in defence. We managed to sort of handle them pretty soundly. It set us up so well for the rest of the season.
Yeah, very interesting to see how that Ironside-Mullin combination in the second half of the season really came to the fore. And yeah, like you say, Houlihan coming into his own during that month of January was a real bonus. That Mullin-Ironside combo teamed up again for the first game in February, a 2-0 trip away at Barrow, and then a rather uncharacteristic loss against Salford, which I remember being handled quite philosophically by us all at that point, because, you know, it wasn't the easiest loss to take. But I do remember you, Tom, being a little more philosophical about that loss and the timing of it.
Yeah, just move on. I think that was very much just the attitude from top to bottom, really. I think, to be fair, I think as a whole, I don't think anyone really got too carried away with it. I think, you know, there's always the odd individuals who, you know, take things maybe a bit far in terms of criticism and that sort of stuff, which, you know, you kind of expect, especially on something like Twitter, for example, which is maybe not the best gauge at times. But yeah, I think it was just sort of one of those things. And the other thing was as well, I think we sort of, it was the sort of start of this period where we came to expect that the return of results from Tuesday night games were just going to be less because we were without our best player in Houlihan, or certainly the man who sort of pulls the strings. And obviously it went catastrophically wrong at Salford, really, really badly wrong. But I think the attitude of everybody involved, and most importantly, obviously, as Bonner and the players, was it doesn't look great, but it's one game. You know, we've got, hopefully a few nicer looking fixtures sort of coming up. Salford away is always going to be a tough game. I know they didn't, you know, have the season that they would have liked or many would have expected, but by far and away, I'd imagine the biggest budget in the division, and not an easy place to go by any means. And we weren't the only team that went there and lost that season, let me tell you. So, obviously not great. And probably if you look through the season, it's probably, other than the mental game at Harrogate, it's probably the only time that we've ever really looked completely out of control of a football match. So maybe against Forest Green a bit earlier on in the year, but that's probably about it. So yeah, I think it would have been a bit odd if we'd got really carried away with it and thought, oh, the wheels have already fallen off, etc. Because, it was all about the response. And that's something that we did really well throughout the season, I think.
Sorry, Jack, I'm sat here laughing, mate, because in a season review on a season that we have got promoted, you've managed to introduce that question to Tom there by praising us as a podcast for how we've reacted to a result. Brilliant. This is great. Let's review the season by how great we've been as a pod. Just don't look at the Apple reviews. February was a brilliant month, wasn't it? It was kind of up and down. There was, obviously Salford, which is quite disappointing, but really February will be remembered as the start of that Tuesday night curse. No wares means no points. That was a tricky one. The result against Salford, I will remember as the real sort of questioning of do we have enough strength in depth, because we've lost, especially in defence, because we've lost Darling and Cundy, and we've now got sort of question marks over these new young lads who've come in and they haven't played, you know, professional football in the football leagues. They've only played in the under 23 league, and Okadina came into quite a lot of stick that night. Fortunately, he turned it around and had a brilliant, brilliant season for us, which I'll eternally be grateful to him for. My image of February would always be Wesley Houlihan getting his Player of the Month trophy. And I think Mark Bonner also got his Manager of the Month trophy for the previous month, for January. But elsewhere on the pitch, kind of sort of a couple of games really stick in my mind. The Mansfield away game where I thought we were brilliant. That second half I thought was one of the best 45 minutes of the whole season. To go from that high to then like the lows of the Tuesday night. So we talk about Salford as being like the big one because of the heavy defeat. But actually we lost to Cheltenham at home on a Tuesday night. And I remember going into that game, and it was being billed as a top of the table clash. You know, we were top at the time and Cheltenham was second. And it just didn't feel real for me at that point. I didn't feel like we were in the title race. I didn't feel like we were going into that game, you know, and if we don't win it, we're not going to win the title. Obviously, that panned out to be us and Cheltenham as the top two, but it just didn't feel real at the time in February. And looking back, we should have been 2-0 up at half time. You just think, what if, you know, what if we'd converted those two chances? We could have possibly won the championship. But yeah, a real mixed month, February. And it was finished off with a contender for goal of the year via Liam O'Neill at Port Vale.
Yeah, I think, Jordan, you touched on it there about sort of not maybe feeling that it was real at that point. I think it's absolutely fair enough. And probably the, and you know, even though the results that we'd had had been brilliant, I think what was really holding a lot of us back from sort of getting behind the idea we might get promoted was the fact that if you looked at the table then, I think we probably played maybe 3 or 4 more games than some other teams. And, you know, everyone was, you know, very much looking at other games, other teams' games in hand, all that sort of stuff. And we weren't that far ahead in terms of points. So a lot of results did go our way. And obviously then I think it was that run where we played against sort of 6-7 teams sort of in and around us, which, you know, ultimately sort of won us promotion. But I think at that point in time, you know, we were very much relying on other teams not to win games to basically keep us in our position. And obviously, we know how it sort of ended, really.
I mean, we mentioned briefly about Mark Bonner back in December, changing the tactics up and, you know, having the courage to do that. It was February, I think, that, you know, we spoke about a couple of things, one being the Salford game, two being, you know, the kind of curse of the Tuesday night, but really kind of, you know, again, were two of the moments that made Bonner as a manager. During that Salford game, you know, Juba Lokadina had a pretty rough game, didn't he? But, you know, Bonner persevered with him. He didn't hook him at half-time. He could have quite easily, you know, had him off, never seen him again. But, you know, he persevered with him till I think, the 65th minute or so. And also, you know, the Wes Houlihan question, you know, the big thing that's kind of dogged our season all year. Does Wes play on Tuesdays? You know, can we make him? Does his contract say he can't? You know, all these rumours and that. And, you know, Mark Bonner just came out and said, he's like, look, you know, the guy's a professional footballer. He knows his body better than anyone else. You know, he's played at the highest level. Like, you know, trust him to do it. And, you know, it was moments like that, you know, but Bonner could have quite easily come out and thrown Wes under the bus there. He could have said, you know what? Yeah, he needs to start playing Tuesdays, you know, needs to start carrying his weight, you know, a little bit more. And, you know, at the same time, he could have quite easily dropped Okadina and we'd never seen him again. But, you know, he stuck with him and just backed his players. And I think, you know, that pays off when you've got a manager who you know is going to back you, even if you're making mistakes, even if you're not able to contribute as much as you like. You know, that's a big part of why we went up, isn't it? It's just the team spirit fostered in this team.
Absolutely. Coming towards the end of February, Cambridge United were sat to the top of League Two, 1 point clear of Forest Green, but with two games in hand and only 2 points clear of Cheltenham. So, yeah, it was very tight at the top. And March was obviously set up to be a huge month. They all were huge months. But, I mean, having got through February in the way they did, Cambridge United came into March looking at promotion if they could keep their own fate in their own hands. It started poorly on a Tuesday night, the 2nd of March, Jordan. A 1-0 loss to Scunthorpe, but it wasn't all doom and gloom in March.
Mate, it's that term, isn't it? Tuesday night. We should be, I don't know, doing a shot every time we mention that. That would have made for an interesting third part to this pod. No, but you're absolutely right. That Scunthorpe Tuesday night game, even now, I still haven't got my head around how I feel about that, because we played so well and we were so dominant. It was kind of hard to sort of poke too much criticism at the performance because we played so well. We just couldn't score, and it's not like we weren't creating chances. We were. We just couldn't, you know, put one away. And then, yeah, real sucker punch, similar to Barrow, a very late goal. Well, not as late as Barrow. I think we still had time to, you know, get back into the game, which we didn't. But it just came back to that kind of notion that I was talking about earlier in the pod. Like, emotions were so heightened this season because of everything that was going on. And then because we were good, you know, we're top of the league. And we just kind of got this drilled into us that we're Cambridge United and we're going to mess it up. And every time something didn't quite go to plan, you're like, that's it. This could be it. This could be us falling to pieces. And fair play to anyone listening to this pod who kept a level head throughout the season and kept perspective and was like, you know what? It's just, you know, just a result. We move on and we go again. You know, fair play to you. But I was pretty much all over the place from Christmas onwards. And yeah, it didn't help Oldham away. That was a very balmy up and down game. But I guess to conclude, I always think back to March as being the month that kind of really started that road to automatic promotion. We talked so much on these pods about that run of like 7 or 8 games. We played everyone in and around us, and we knew that would define our season. And yeah, March was when that period started.
Yeah, kicked it off with the thingy game, the game after that Oldham game. Oh, sorry, we played Bolton, didn't we, the Tuesday before, and then it was that game against Forest Green that I think if you didn't sort of believe we could do it then, if you didn't think we could do it then, after that you definitely did, and you definitely thought that we weren't just going to bottle it because we were playing against teams that were in and around us. We were absolutely excellent on the day. You know, recall. Again, you know, talking about another West Uland masterclass. I think Paul Mullin actually missed a penalty on that day as well, and limited at the time what looked like automatic promotion contenders to virtually nothing against us. So, an absolutely, you know, a really sort of good start to that run. And like you say, Jordan, we said as much on this pod. It wasn't going to be the results before or after that run that really won us promotion. It was going to be the results in the next 6-7 games that really sort of determined that for us, I think. And then I think really pivotal moment as well was the Carlisle game, because the first half in that performance was probably, as good as I've ever seen us play. We were creating chances, putting together some really nice moves. And then in the second half, it looked like we were going to just chuck it away. They equalised. They really put a lot of pressure on us. And then, I think it was 93rd minute. I think it was Adam May pops up at the back post and sort of won the game for us. So really important results. And again, you know, we talked about the sort of mental strength of the team to keep going till the end. It wasn't the first time. I don't think it was the last time either that obviously that sort of thing happened. You know, we won late on against Walsall, late on away against Port Vale. Obviously picked up some of those early points that we mentioned as well, late on in games. And sort of towards the end of March, I think, you know, really set us up for that sort of dash towards the finish line to just, in some of these games, they're a must not lose. And obviously, if you win, it's a nice bonus. And we ended up winning quite a few of them. So it was, really, really enjoyable.
We're going to talk in the next part about goals of the season. But Tom has just reminded me about not just what could have been goal of the season, but possibly goal of the decade that nearly happened at Carlisle away. So I don't want to get through this review without shouting out, I think it was Wes, Boateng and Mullin who were involved in that move. But yeah, that first half was blistering. It was some of the best football I think I've ever seen us play, certainly, you know, this season. And it was, yeah, it really set us up to, you know, to finish off that second part of that run in April and yeah, go into the final run-in.
Absolutely. I mean, the amount of goals scored after the 90th minute for Cambridge United this season is partly the difference between going up and going down. Incredible, you know, late resolve shown time and again from Cambridge. And yeah, going into into April with real positivity about the possibility that Cambridge United were actually going to do it. And and then we moved into April. And of course, the final game of the season in May. And we will obviously give that the attention it's due because it was quite important in the end. April again was just wedged full of games, and it started on a Friday with another Paul Mullin brace. I mean, the amount of games that he scored braces in two one or two nil victories is kind of outstanding this season. And yeah, he really had found his groove. And yeah, it was a nervous April, but the games were coming so thick and fast. That was one thing that really helped. Owen, what's your abiding memory of April?
It was a crazy month, wasn't it? It started off brilliantly. I think it started off with a bank holiday, did it not? With the Morecambe and the Tranmere games. And I remember talking on this podcast saying, you know, what would be a good result out of that? I think at the end of the day, we said even as few as 2 points might be all right, you know, compared to where other teams were around us. You know, it's worth noting that some teams still had a lot of games to play at that point of the season. Some teams had kind of taken themselves out of the running, I think, had, you know, played catch up and not really capitalised on the games in hand. So, you know, we ended up with four points from those two Easter games. We drew up at Tranmere as well, with Mullen missing and then getting the rebound of a penalty, I think. Then we had another game in Newport, I think. We won 1-0 there. You know, we had the Orient game, which, you know, I think was just, you know, insane. I've missed out a couple, but yeah, for obvious reasons. But that Orient game there was, you know, I think that's when it was like, okay, this is it. You know, we'd kind of got ourselves in this position, but we needed 3 points from the last three games, and it was like, right, come on, we can't not do this, can we? And you know, just the team spirit the guys showed in that Orient game, the way they battled back, you know, it's always a difficult place to go with, you know, with fans or without fans. You know, Orient always seemed to up their game against us a little bit, and we were just great, weren't we? We just fought in that game and got the results we needed.
I think this whole period that we're talking about in this part of the pod, you know, January through to May, I think you could kind of sum it up by just asking people, at what point did you start to believe? Like, what point did you think it was happening? Some people might be like, yeah, didn't doubt it for a second in January or February or March or whatever. For me, I'll always remember April for that moment, that Drysdale header, that goal at Newport away. That was the moment for me that I went, this is happening. We might not win the league, we might finish third, but I definitely feel like this is happening for us automatically now. And that's, yeah, that smile on Drysdale's face as he ran off and celebrated will stick with me for a long time. The celebrating of Ironside winning a free kick towards the end of the game, again, that's right up there for moments of the season for me. But yeah, that was it. I was quite late to the believing, you know, the penny drop for me in April.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, like you said, Owen, just going back to your point, obviously you mentioned that after the Orient game, we kind of set ourselves up perfectly for just that one last win, which was right, and that's exactly what we needed. But my God, they didn't make it easy for us. We probably didn't speak about the Stevenage Harrogate games as much as maybe we could and probably should have done.
We don't need to. We don't need to. I mean,
like, because obviously after the Grimsby game, All the sort of talk that we did in the pod after that was about, you know, the day and sort of how we experienced it and what our sort of what memories we'll take away from it, that sort of stuff. And I think we made a decision as a group just to kind of glaze over those other two games, which was fine, but they certainly have their place in an end of season review pod, because look, the Stevenage game was one of them. It happens sometimes. There's a lot of expectation on you. There's that sort of nerves going into the game that this might be the day that we do it. And there was a lot of things about, can we win the title? Can we do this, that and the other? And they would have really wanted to beat us, Stevenage, obviously, given where they are. But going into the Harrogate game, because like it was about 6 weeks ago now. So like it's worth just going back and just really sort of looking at this again, because Harrogate had, so the game's on the Friday night. Harrogate were due to play on the Monday, I think it was, or on the Sunday at Wembley in the FA Trophy final from the season before, and made about 9 changes to their team that was already about 17th in the league. We went there needing 1 point to secure promotion, just a point against a massively changed, out-of-form Harrogate team who had beaten just a couple of months before at home. And what transpired was the most mental 90 minutes of football I've ever seen in, I genuinely think ever. I think it's the most mad thing I've ever seen on a football pitch. 3-0 down within about 20 minutes. Get about to 3-2. They got the other end to make it 4-2. We get back into the game at 4-4. And you think, right, just get out of here. It's been a mad night. Just get out with the point. Get up. Get promoted. And then celebrate it on Saturday. And then they scored a very late winner to make it 5-4. And you come out of that one scratching your head. And I think at that time, because we went into the last day of the season with 27 possible permutations of the results between us, Bolton and Morecambe. One of those 27 sort of combinations would keep us down. That was if we lost the game against Grimsby and the other two won their games. And I think after the Harrogate game, if you'd asked any Cambridge fan what they thought were going to happen, they would have said it would have been that one that kept us down. Because it really shook the fan base, I think. We were really like, we can't throw this away, can we? And it's like, can we? We definitely can't do it, can we? And it added a lot more nerves into that Grimsby game from a fan's perspective than probably needed to be. I wonder if it just kind of settled the players down a little bit, though. Because it's easy to say now, like, you know, like we said a lot of times already, but it's easy to say now that we're sat here promoted, but I just wonder whether it just got a bit of madness out of their system. And, you know, like, I remember Greg Taylor trying to head the ball back and dive in header from about 40 yards out.
Pressure. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Tom. I'm going to have nightmares again tonight. Cheers for that.
Yeah, I know this segment might not be the most, managing to pick out of a brilliant end to the season, a run in which we stormed to the top three, picking out of it the one night that was a bit fucking mental. But I think it's worth just touching on because, look, we can talk about what memories do you take from the season, what points stand out for you. Sitting there watching that game on that Friday night, I was fully expecting us to win promotion that night and do it quite comfortably as well. What game next was just mad, but then thankfully, we got the chance to put it right a few days later, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Tom, we really didn't touch on it in the last pod, and it's only right that we acknowledge every game in the season, even a little bit. But yeah, that final game on that Saturday at the Abbey against Grimsby, and yeah, if you wanted your nerves settled, a goal in the first half an hour of a game can help with that. But I think, as we touched on in the previous pod, that when Wes's goal went in, I think half the fan base started to believe, you know, or were feeling comfortable. But for some people, it still took that third goal from Mullin. But that was the day that Cambridge United secured promotion to League One, the final day of the season. And I mean, we've spoken about that. And we could do till the cows come home, but an incredible achievement by Cambridge United, Mark Bonner and the rest of the staff at the club. And recognition of an incredible achievement from everyone involved. And we'll be doing our awards, UTAS awards, coming up next. So with the elation of getting promoted right at the death of the season, it seems only right that we do our UTAS awards. And probably this year, it's probably the hardest year for us to do them, because usually our UTAS awards are tongue in cheek and done with a bit of a joke. But we actually smashed it this season, and we can actually, you know, go from it from a pretty serious point of view as well. So first things first, player of the year from each of you. And of course, there'll be a name that's going through everyone's mind particularly, but you know, we've watched them in and out this season. It's not just been a one-man show at all. So Owen, starting with you, who would be your player of the year?
Yeah, the obvious choice really. Kyle Noyle has been absolutely superb this season. Everyone's going to say other names, you know, we know that, but when you look at how Noyle's played, how, you know, just what he's brought to this team, his attacking intent, his his defensive work, he's weighed in with a couple of goals as well. He's just been a player that we've been missing. I know he was here the year before as well, but you know, he's just been a player that we haven't had a right back of that class really ever, you know. And I think he's just unfortunate that there's four better right backs than him in English right backs than him in the country, or he'd probably be going to the Euros, to be honest.
Are you ruling out Ben Chenery there, Owen?
Ben Chenery was all right, but Will just, yeah, he's just his crossing on the ball, his, you know, his vision, how he, you know, when Houlihan started earlier in the season out wide, you know, him and Noyle were linking up superbly. You know, he linked up well with Hannon. He's linked up well with Mullin. He brings everyone into the game, really, as well as being an outlet for United to play out from the back, which again is something that, you know, didn't really happen before. We were very much get the ball, lump it forward, but, you know, being able to give it to Noyle and as well as you know, Duncan Iredale in their left back positions, just kind of carry the ball up the pitch and make chances. So yeah, Kyle Noyle is my player of the season.
Brilliant stuff. Coming to you next, Tom.
Yeah, I think, well, probably the first thing to say is that it sums up how good we were as a team all season, that in a year where your striker scores 34 goals in all competitions, there's still genuinely a bit of a debate to be had about who should win player of the season. I think Mullin sort of won it, you know, won the League Two player of the year, and I think the club's own one as well. But I'd probably say, and I can understand from Owen's point of view, I'd say Noyle probably for like consistency of performance. I'd probably say for the last sort of 4 months of the season, I think Houlihan stood out, and I probably would have given it to him, to be honest, and probably would give it to him for this. He obviously wasn't there for all the games. He wasn't obviously playing all the games because we know that he had to manage his fitness a little bit differently, certainly towards the end of the year. But in terms of level of performance at his highest, he was absolutely staggering. I mean, the debate, I think, had to be around him, like, where does he rank in terms of all-time players that we've had? Because I've never seen anyone of that ability play for us. I think you're probably looking back at, like, Dion, and probably that's, like, the comparison that you'd make in terms of relative, like, ability to the sort of levels that they're at. He was that good at times, like, really, really incredible. And a lot of those results, absolutely, he was controlling games. I think it was the game against Crawley. I mean, thankfully, Crawley just sort of gave him free rein and just allowed him to do whatever he wanted to do. But he really made the most of it. And at times it was just like watching, I think it was a Forest Green game. Like, he was everywhere. He was like picking the ball up off the back four. He was sort of running through the channels. He was sort of, you know, linking up with the strikers. And for a bloke of his age, that's pretty mental. And the fact that he was doing it for sort of 90 minutes, and yeah, it had to be managed a little bit differently, and he couldn't play in various fixtures that, you know, we might otherwise have got more out of. But yeah, I think in terms of level of performance, for me, that's what I'll probably go with Wes.
And coming to you then, Jordan.
Yeah, look, I'm sticking to the script. Yeah, it's one man, one man only. Sign your contract, Mr. Paul Mullin. It pains me because I, you know, hearing Tom there has just reminded me how much I loved Wes throughout the season. The moments that he brought, technically the best player in the league, and technically one of the best players United have probably ever had. But you just can't overlook what Paul Mullin's achieved. 34 goals across all competitions, the amount of records that he's broken. We're not going to see anything like that again, you would imagine, for many, many, many years. Breaking a record that is as old as I am, you know, even like David Crown said, they did this brilliant interview with him. He didn't think it was a particularly impressive record that he had set for the club, so he was relieved that Mullin had done it. But yeah, it's got to be Paul Mullin for me. Just thinking about it and saying it out loud, 34 goals, that's incredible. So yeah, I'm going with Paul Mullin for player of the year.
Just to quickly jump in on that, Jordan, I, you know, obviously, I think the incredible thing about Mullin's season was that sometimes strikers at this level, when they score that level of goals, they're all basically the same goal. But it's not just in terms of the amount of goals that he scored, but the quality of goals and sort of range of goals that he was scoring were something to take away from it. You know, you had penalties in there, you had headers in there, you had sort of, you know, poachers sort of goals, you know, from inside the 6-yard box. But he also had goals like the one at Morecambe where sort of, you know, Cruyff turned it on the edge of the box and curled it into the top corner. You had the goal against Walsall where he rattled it into the top corner in the last minute. You had the one at Grimsby where as he powered it in. Even the goal I think he scored against Oldham at home where he sort of, you know, turned his man and managed to, you know, plant it in the opposite corner was incredible. So just to add to that a little bit, that it's not just about the amount of goals that he scored, it's also about the quality of what he did as well, which probably makes it more impressive than if he had just scored, you know, a load of tap-ins, which obviously wasn't the case.
You're absolutely right. But I was still nervous every time we had a penalty and he was still over the ball.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it almost seems typical of Cambridge United that you can have a man in that sort of form and yet every time he's gifted it on a golden plate, like a penalty, he seems to miss. Certainly later on in the season. But yeah, I do know what you mean. I watched that one at Tranmere from, I think, behind the sofa, really. So yeah.
Well, yeah, it's certainly been a whirlwind season and some quite worthy nominees for that award and all had a cracking season. Moving on to now, moment of the season. You've got a bit of creative license with this. It can be a game or it can just be, you know, one specific moment. For example, mine probably would be Big Joe Ironside winning that free kick, you know, late on, just typified Cambridge United season as a whole, really. So, yeah, anything like that. And, yeah, as I say, you've got a bit of creative license. Owen, what was your moment of the season?
I'm going to go for a game I don't think we managed to talk about during the little roundup we just done there. But it was actually when we beat Walsall 2-0 at the Bescot back in October. I don't think we'd won at the Bescot Stadium possibly ever, but certainly not, you know, in 20 plus years. And it was just the image that the club photographer put out of Paul Mullin taking that penalty was just like, it was like a side by side comparison image with John Taylor scoring the penalty at Nottingham Forest back in 1998. Both wearing the same dark blue, light blue halved shirt. I think Mullin maybe had his head bandaged as well, like Shaggy did that night. And it's just, you know, for all the, you know, and we won the game as well, which we obviously didn't up in Nottingham. But, you know, for all the, you know, the wins we've had this season, for the promotion parties, all that are fantastic. But, you know, the great thing about supporting the club is, you know, it's just like the link to the history and, you know, all the kind of shite times you have supporting United. Just, you know, the great times we have make up for it, don't they? And, you know, seeing Mullin and Taylor there kind of side by side, just reminds you of, you know, the various legends we've had playing for this club over the years.
Yeah, good stuff. Jordan, coming to you next for your moment of the season.
Right. I've narrowed it down to two and I'm going to stick with my two. I don't care what you say. This season, I literally could have listed off about 50. So I'm having to. Don't like it. Piss off. I kind of knew that Owen and Tom would pick really, really good ones. So I wanted to like maybe be a little bit out of the box with the ones that I've gone with. And the first one, technically and physically, I wasn't there for, and I didn't see it happen firsthand. So you must be thinking that's mental. You can't be going with that. You know, I didn't actually see this moment happen until later in the evening. But I feel like this moment, and all Hughes fans are going to feel exactly the same as me. The moment they saw this image, they just imagined themselves there. They felt it. They felt like something was just so right and so perfect in this moment. And I'm talking about Wes Houlihan drinking a pint of Guinness out of a glass at full time after Grimsby. I just, yeah. You know, we talk about like hanging it up in like in a gallery or whatever, but there's just something so perfect about that image, and that will stay with me for the rest of my days as a Cambridge fan. If anyone says, tell me about the 2021 season, I won't think about COVID and having to watch at home or wearing a mask for 90 minutes against Fulham's kids. it'll be that moment that I will think of, and I will remember, and I will always smile for. And I feel like every Hughes fan, when they look at that picture, can just imagine themselves with their arm round Wes saying, "Don't worry, mate, your next one's on me as well." So yeah, that's up there for me. And I feel like every promotion kind of has iconic photos. You know, Owen just a moment ago was talking about Shaggy from, you know, from when we got promoted under McFarland in that light blue, dark blue sort of half top. And, you know, I've got a brilliant book written by Andrew Bennett, and on the front cover there is John Taylor and Phil Chappell doing the moose gesture at Wembley when we won in that playoff final. And I feel like technically it should be the mullin on top of the turnstile photo that is the more iconic one. But for me, it will be that Wesley one. So that's my first moment of the season. And in my second moment of the season, I'm going to get political, so apologies if this offends, but the reaction of United fans after a couple of United fans booed the taking of the knee, the response, the making the noise to drown that out, that made me exceptionally proud. So that will also be a moment for me this season.
Absolutely. You've definitely got the license to have both. Those are your moments. Very well said. And Tom, for you, your moment of the season.
Yeah, I feel like the other guys have gone quite sort of out of the box with theirs, which is absolutely fair enough. So I might as well sort of talk through the more obvious ones. Obviously, you've got those two 5-0 wins earlier on in the season. You've got obviously the win against Port Vale, Mullin's sort of late goal to, you know, score his hat trick. You've obviously got the last minute equaliser away at Cheltenham, and then sort of moving a little bit further on in the season, you've got obviously the late winners, the late screamers from Mullin and against Walsall, and O'Neill against Port Vale. And then obviously, you know, you've got the goals on the last day of the season. As you can probably tell, I'd really struggle to narrow it down from those. But if you put a gun to my head and ask me to pick one, I'd probably say O'Neill at Port Vale is the moment of the season. I think for a few reasons. I think firstly, because of who it was who scored it, a player who, rightly or wrongly, had come under quite a lot of criticism from Cambridge fans about his inclusion in the team. Not really his fault, but, you know, each their own. Obviously, it hadn't been the easiest season for him because he'd been injured and sort of out of the team for a long time. I think he started the first two games and then obviously was replaced by Adam May for long parts of the season. It's obviously not been the easiest, probably, time at the club for him, I think it's fair to say. He spent a lot of time on the sidelines injured or suspended, and when he has played, it's been difficult for him to really put a run of form together. Obviously, then you've got the quality of the goal, because, I mean, he connected with that. Like, the way that you can kick a football, like, he caught that so sweetly. It came off exactly the right part of his foot. He caught it at the right moment, and it just absolutely flew into that top corner. And I remember being sat there. I think I was watching the game on my own, actually. And, like, I was prancing around the living room like a kid, basically, after it went in. And yeah, and then, I mean, you can talk about the importance of it as well. Obviously, I think, you know, Owen, you mentioned breaking the duck away at Walsall. Port Vale, again, a place we've not had a lot of joy at. And, you know, to go there and win, it was almost like one of those, sort of, well, if we can do that this year, then really what's sort of stopping us? Obviously, in terms of, you know, the extra 2 points on the board, you know, we all know how the season finished. You know, they're absolutely crucial come the end of the year. Yeah, obviously, just in terms of the absolute elation that it must have caused sort of around living room, sort of, you know, obviously around the area, people watching on iFollow. For me, I probably have to go with that one. But I think we are fortunate this season that you can literally run through a list of like 10 or 15 really obvious standout moments from the season. And then if you dig a little bit deeper than that, you can come to even more, just like the guys have just mentioned there.
Amazing stuff. And yeah, if I had to put another gun to your head, a separate one, would that Liam O'Neill goal be your goal of the season as well, just to clarify?
Do you know what? I actually think, and this might be a bit of a controversial opinion, I think long-range goals are really overrated, just generally. I mean, he absolutely twatted that, so it was brilliant. Like, I think I think the one that you can compare it to is the Mullin one against Walsall. I think O'Neill's was better than that just because of the way that he caught it and you know, some of those other things that we mentioned. But I think if you ask me for the goal of the season, probably going to steal one off the other two guys as well. But I'll probably have to give it to Mullin against Port Vale.
Oh, you shit. That was mine.
I absolutely knew that would be yours. I'm so glad that I got in first there. I mean, the move, I mean, like, you almost picture it. I think it was Mitov to Dunk, to Houlihan, to Boateng, to Dunk again. Oh, sorry, Mitov to Iredale, to Houlihan, to Boateng, to Dunk, to Mullin, goal. It was back to front in about 5 seconds. It was absolutely unbelievable football of the like that I have just never really seen us play. It was so energetic as well. Like, it wasn't like beautiful, like tiki-taka football sort of around the pitch where he put together 40 passes and then someone finished it off right at the end. It was so good. So I'll probably go for that one. And I'd also like to apologise to the other two of you who I know for a fact.
I even dropped a hint in like part one that I was gearing up to talk about that one in more detail. It's my goal of the season as well. For all the screamers and the very late goals and everything, that team goal was just terrific. And it came at a point where we'd had a very good start, but we were sort of like thinking to ourselves, well, is it just a good start? So the fact that it came in a game against, like we were saying at the start of the pod, a very fancy team at the time, it wasn't just like some dross opposition. It was a good team. So it all kind of added together. It was the first time that we really saw the quality of Boateng. He was new into the squad at the time. There was a small link up between Houlihan and Boateng, which would go on to sort of shape the second half of the season. The short passes out from defence, the ball through from Boateng, I think maybe 30, 40 yards along the ground, takes out two players with its sort of accuracy, Dunk's pace, able to sort of whip across in, really teasing one, and then just Mullin just appears at the back stick and just wallops it top corner. It was brilliant. The best goal I've seen in a very, very long time for United. So yeah, I'm backing that as my goal for the season as well.
I was actually going to go for Liam O'Neill's goal at Port Vale, but you've taken that one off me. And my second choice was going to be Mullin's goal against Port Vale. But we scored lots of great goals. I think all the goals we scored against Morecambe, back in that 5-0 win at the start of the season were fantastic. But I think for my actual choice, I'm also going to go with another Liam O'Neill goal, just purely because of the way he's played and the contribution he's made this season and the kind of hurdles he's had to overcome. Not only his injury record, which is, you know, been must be painful for him at times, but you know, also just the kind of the relationship he has with some of the fans. But that goal he scored against Grimsby for me was just that release there was just like that's it. That's when we're going up. We got, you know, that was the first goal against Grimsby. We only needed one goal. It's like, who better for him? Who better to get it than Liam O'Neill? Like, you know, the guy's been at the club years. Like him or not, he's proper Cambridge United. You know, yeah, that was just a great goal for me. So yeah, Liam O'Neill against Grimsby at home to send us up.
I'm just going to echo something which Tom basically said a few minutes ago, but isn't it mad how this season we've got so many options? You know, we had so many options for moment of the year, but here we are talking about goal of the year. And we've already listed off four, and we've not mentioned, you know, Mullin at home to Walsall. We've not mentioned Jack Iredale away to Southend. The fact that we're talking about 5, 6, 7 fantastic goals, which in any other year would have been goal of the season for us, is absolutely mad. I can think of, in the not too, you know, distant past, really struggling for goal of the season contenders. And we've had like goal of the months on like Twitter, which have just been like really, really bland tap-ins and things like that. So yeah, what an absolute season this has been from the lockdown legends.
Yeah, absolutely. Testament to how good they've been across across the board, really, everyone contributing. And yeah, testament to Liam O'Neill, especially for his contribution, because yeah, he's had a very hard time from fans, and he's a, you know, an absolute man of the club. And I think before we go, I think the unsung heroes, you know, it's a kind of phrase that gets thrown about, but I think especially in these times, it's really important to recognise that, you know, from your own club's point of view. And Tom touched earlier on the groundsman, you know, Ian Dahler and his team, you know, just doing an amazing job all the time anyway, but they kept a couple of games on this season, which were, were amazing. And I think it is just good to kind of go around and yeah, give recognition to those, Tom.
Yeah, definitely. I think on a pod like this, it's really easy to just talk about the team and the football and, you know, like we have obviously rightly done so, talk about some of the sort of highlights of the season. You know, it's a season review pod. That's exactly what we're going to do. But I think there's a lot of people sort of behind the scenes, some maybe a bit more visible than others, who obviously deserve credit. I think on the footballing side of things, I think you'd have to look at Ben Strang. Again, a bit like Liam O'Neill, someone who's taken a lot of flack in his time, certainly second time round at the club. Obviously, he built the team that got us out of the conference or helped to do that with Richard Money all those years ago. And I think what you saw this season was not something that they just kind of pitched together this summer, put a team together and got promoted. This was like the result of a process which had taken a number of years. We didn't appreciate it at the time. I think it's fair to say that, you know, guys like Hannon coming in, O'Neill a few years ago, like what we did was we built this team over a number of years. And I actually think in what the end result was actually a group of players who I actually feel very connected to, which might not otherwise have happened. So I think Ben Strang's someone who deserves a lot of, you know, a lot of credit. Obviously, he's now the sporting director is his title. But I think at the time it was head of football. So, as you can probably imagine, was probably instrumental in having Bonner selected as the first team manager, which obviously is obviously a huge decision and something that shouldn't be taken for granted. Just how right he got that. I think obviously he'll have, you know, quite a big say in how the recruitment process works, all that sort of stuff. He's managed to help us put together this brilliant team, and I think it's doubly important just to shout him out because he has had so much criticism. You can't just criticise somebody for things that they're doing wrong, and then when something goes so right like it did, not really mention them, because he's probably had to bear some of that criticism, maybe begrudgingly at times. But you know, ultimately, you know, he'll have his place in the history of this club as someone who really contributed massively to not just one of the best seasons that we've ever had, but certainly one of the most important as well. So that's one. I think, you know, we can go on and talk about several others. I don't know if any of the other guys have got sort of suggestions.
Yeah, I've got one. I think back to sort of like the summer before like the season kicked off, and there were so many unknowns, and you know, we were talking about, would we go into regional football, would we have a season, would we go bust, all these things that were going on, and then what happened in what would normally be like peak pre-season was this fantastic article came out on the Telegraph, which really emphasized and highlighted people at the club and work going on at the club that I knew nothing about. And I think the Telegraph called us the first mental health friendly club in the Football League. And it was brilliant. It was brilliant to have that kind of press going around for our club. But it was also brilliant to read why we were getting that press. So there's a whole load of people involved in sort of that side for the club. People like Daz Coakley, you know, Godric Smith on the board, Ian Dahler, Mark Bonner himself, and I think David Burkett from the CUSP. So all of those as a collective that really sort of put United on the map in such an incredible way are unsung heroes for me.
I'm going to go with the guys on the media team, actually. I'm going to say Dave Vant, Ben Phillips, Ollie, who do the Matchday Media. It's been really enjoyable to watch this year. You know, I think I might have mentioned it in a previous pod, but it kind of makes the game a bit more of an event. You know, having the pre-match build-up, you know, seeing the players walk from their cars to the dressing room, you know, get interviewed before the game. You get to know them a bit more. You get a bit more insight into their mindset, into their personalities, and you know, the stuff that you know, Dave's kind of pretty much show, where, you know, he just does a great job of geeing the fans up, getting them ready. It's you know, it's just great. I just really enjoy it. You know, I don't know if I'm necessarily the target audience for it sometimes, but it works, and it just makes each game, you know, when you can't go to a game, because that's the thing, isn't it? That's what we've missed this season. You know, we've all got our pre-match rituals. You know, you go to this pub, you meet up with these mates, you wear this shirt, whatever. You can't do that this season. You couldn't do that this season. You know, you've just got to, you walk into your living room, you open your laptop or turn your TV on and watch it on iFollow. So to have something that still gives you a bit of, you know, a bit of pre-match rituals, you know, a bit of, yeah, just a bit of like, come on, this is a big day. There's, you know, this is a big game on today. So yeah, they're my unsung heroes. They've done a great job, all of them.
Yeah, definitely. Completely agree with that. And touched on it a little bit and talk about Ben Strange and sort of the squad that we built. Is about how sort of connected that I think, generally speaking, we as a fan base feel to the club right now. Because I think if you turn the clock back maybe 2 or 3 years, it was probably as distant as many of us have ever felt, and now it's completely the opposite. And that doesn't happen by luck. That doesn't happen by chance. That's because there's clearly been a huge emphasis on keeping the fans in the know on what's going on around the club. A huge drive to make us feel a part of what's going on, despite not actually being a part of it and not being, you know, not being able to be there. And that's something that really can't be underestimated, because especially in a time like this, like when you can't be there, like you sort of, you kind of need to be looked after by the club in many ways, and that. And I think they've done absolutely terrifically, not just in terms of the football, but as we've mentioned, the work they're doing sort of around the community throughout the sort of initial lockdown of the pandemic was really important as well. And that's something that I think they've really focused on sort of over the last sort of 12 to 18 months as well, just like the outreach in the community. I think it's important that we as a football club are kind of a product to our community in many ways. And a lot of that is, you know, just being able to kind of help out the people in the area that obviously need it most. And I think to see like the players, the manager getting involved in a lot of that, was terrific. And I think at times, I think Bonner was actually manning the phones, wasn't he, sort of during the summer, you know, calling people up to see how they were, talking about season tickets, all that sort of stuff. And that's you know, that sort of thing can't be taken for granted, because I know for a fact, and I can say for sure, that we've had managers recently, you know, that kind of naming names, you just wouldn't have done that. They wouldn't have, they'd have laughed at the idea of getting on the phone to a fan and sort of asking them how they are and all that sort of stuff. So it's really good to have something like that at the helm as well. And, you know, we probably haven't talked about Bonner too much on obviously this episode, and it'd be wrong to call him an unsung hero, because he's certainly had his praises sang by quite a lot of people. But I think he's the one at the centre of all of it that I think you really come out of this with so much credit. It's such a brilliant story. And obviously, during the season, it was all sort of developing, so you can't really kind of take anything for granted and get too carried away with things like that. But I think now, looking back on it, to be led to promotion by one of our own, who is, I think, maybe not the youngest, but one of the youngest managers in the Football League, and his first ever permanent job as obviously a first-team manager, was just terrific. And seeing him sort of, because all season there's been so much credit sort of passed his way, and he's always been the first one to say, it's not about me, it's about everyone else and sort of the team and the people behind the scenes and that sort of stuff, which is absolutely fair and absolutely correct. But to see him sort of have that moment on top of the NRE turnstiles in the Dublin suite afterwards, where he could really sort of start to kind of sink in, you know, just kind of what he's done, was terrific. So yeah, probably not the best choice for an unsung hero, being the manager of the team just got us promoted, but certainly someone that I think you know, you can never talk too much about in terms of how well they've done.
Yeah, absolutely incredible season, and just thank you to everyone at the club. Really, it's been an eventful season and handled incredibly by everyone from the top to the bottom, and yeah, very privileged to have had a tiny part to play in it. Tom Walker, thank you.
Thanks very much, mate. Good to be back. I'll never get tired of talking about this sort of stuff.
Owen Kiernan, thank you.
Yeah, let's never talk about the Harrogate game again. It's banned from the pod from now on.
And Jordan Warland, thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I'll see you in League One.